Before we get started into the comments we planned on talking about today, I feel like I got to say a couple things about the state of California because we're not going to have a chance to do this. And I know that Margaret's going to be waving the signs pretty soon saying 5 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute. So we got to talk fast. But I do want to say that California is absolutely kind of full bore moving towards healthcare reform. The state made that decision some time ago when we were all waiting to see what the Supreme Court was going to do. Our Secretary of Health and Human Services, Diana Dooley, came out very publicly and said, we're just going to keep going. We don't know what the Supreme Court's going to do, and if they do something we have to deal with, well, we'll deal with it then, but we're not going to stop. So the state has is very much engaged in Medicaid expansion already, and it's basically at the county level, which we'll explain in a little bit in a minute. We have a demonstration project that's about to get up and running around looking at the folks with both Medicare and Medicaid, the dually eligible that we talk about a lot. The Health Exchange Board is up, running, has been for a year, and will be well prepared by the time it has to actually be in work. We have ACOs developing all over the state, and we also have a California Coalition for Whole Health that's really advocating strongly for mental health and substance abuse services and the basic benefits and throughout all of these services. You're going to hear a little bit more about that from Tom in a few minutes. So in terms of who's involved, the state administration's very engaged, very involved. The state legislature is also very involved, has been passing legislation. The counties are very involved. In the California, the county services, health, welfare, et cetera, is all delivered at the county level, and the counties hold the risk for all the health care as well. Our hospitals are involved. The health insurance companies are involved. Health plans, providers, I mean, I could go on and on and on, but everybody is very engaged and moving towards health care reform. The one thing that I could see that would stop this kind of ball of energy that's moving forward is if the Fed cut off the money. As you may have heard, that California is a little tight on funds right now. So that could be a problem for us. But if that doesn't happen, then I expect California will continue in its march toward health care reform. So let me talk a little bit about what we're going to do. I'm going to talk a little bit about our business case for bidirectional integration, and I'll explain why we do that in a second. We're going to talk some about our integration efforts, which are all over the state. And then we're going to end up with, Tom's going to talk a bit about the California Coalition for Whole Health. So key premises. The first one is that we are, in our integration efforts, trying to reattach the head to the body, right? So I don't know about you, but when I was in training initially getting my degree, we focused, I'm a psychologist, so we focused on the mind and the head and the brain. That's where we focused, as though there was no influence coming from the rest of you. And the folks that I know in general health, we've talked a lot about this, they focus as though there was no mind, right? You just have to take care of what's from the neck down. So the first thing we're trying to do is bring those two pieces together. The other thing that we believe and that is a premise for these conversations is that all healthcare is local. We put together a group of people several years ago when we first started on this integration initiative. We brought in kind of thought leaders and health and primary care, mental health, substance use, and a lot of these folks were academics as well as providers and teachers, and we still concluded that whatever the health policy is at the federal level and at the state level, and we hope it's good policy, whether it's going to work or not is going to be determined by the folks at the local level, because every community is slightly different, has different resources, different personalities, all kinds of different environmental mixes in that. So whatever happens, it's going to happen basically on the local level. So we really see that the local players are the key in fixing the healthcare system in California. Again, it's really important to have good policies, but the key really is what are people going to do on the ground. So when we started this, let me tell you how we got started. Oh, that's, I just put some links in here so that if you want to look at any of these reports, they're easy to find. So this is what initially drove us. Quite a few years ago, when the National Association of State Mental Health Program Directors came out with this data, which apparently was old data, but it was brand new to us, that people with mental illnesses die 25 years before the rest of the population. And primarily, because of preventable or treatable physical health care issues. And we discovered that the people that we were treating, paying all this attention above the neck, were not getting the rest of their health care needs met. And that really kind of popped us into getting serious about trying to do integration, trying to get health care for our folks who had these various diseases. Then Washington State did some additional work, and they looked at, well, what if you added substance use disorders into that? What happens? And in their study, you lose another 5 years of life. So we're looking at about 48 years of age. Now, Riverside County, which is one of our large counties in the South, when they saw this, they said, well, we want to look at our own population, the population that we are treating. So when they looked at their population that they're treating, they were shocked to find out that these people, the average lifespan was 41.8 years of age. That absolutely blew them away and got them very serious, and they're doing some great work. So briefly, when I talk about bidirectional integration, which is our focus here, I want to explain what that means. We're really looking at if a person has a mild or a moderate behavioral health complexity or risk, that person should be seen in primary care. There should be a level of behavioral health services in primary care that can address those issues. But if the person has a very serious or severe behavioral health risk, that person needs to have their care centered in the specialty mental health or substance use system. And primary health care needs to be available there. So that's what we mean by bidirectional integration. We want to make sure it's happening both ways. One of the things I found when we first started out trying to advocate for this, I found I could talk all day long about how important it was to get health care to people, to improve their health outcomes. And what I discovered is people would all go, yeah, oh, that's serious, that's a problem, and then they'd go into something else. But when we started talking about the bottom line, the cost to the healthcare system, boy, I got a lot more attention. So we've really focused a fair amount of effort. We have what we call the business case for bidirectional integration. And on our website, there are a number of papers there that kind of get into a lot of detail that I'm just going to hit briefly this morning. So I want to talk briefly about depression. It's one of the top 10 conditions driving medical costs. According to a survey of employers, it ranks number seven in their estimation of what was driving their health care costs. And I use depression a lot because it's a common issue that most people understand and can relate to. It's also the greatest cause of loss of productivity among workers. And when employers talk about this, they talk not just about absenteeism, the person's not there due to depression. They also talk about what they call presenteeism. So the person's on the job, but they're not getting much done. And those diagnosed with depression have nearly twice the annual healthcare costs of those who are not diagnosed with depression. So that's the number that gets a lot of attention. And the cost burden to employers for workers with depression, according to this survey, was estimated to be about $6,000 a year per depressed worker. So those numbers start to get the business community kind of paying attention. Now, this is a great study. If you haven't read it, I would urge you to do that. The link is here at the bottom. One of the things that was different about Faces of Medicaid 3 is that they looked at 5 years of utilization data, but they also added in the pharmacy data. So they could then see what the person was actually being treated for, whatever the diagnosis might be. One of the things they concluded is that fewer than 5% of beneficiaries account for more than 50% of overall Medicaid costs. So when I say that to organizations, they realize they've really got to know who that 5% is, and they've got to address their needs if they want to bring their costs down. And 75% of Medicaid costs are a result of three or more chronic conditions. Now, most of us know that, so that's not a surprise. But when you look at the pairs of conditions that are impacting cost, among the top five pairs, three of those include a psychiatric diagnosis. So again, when you're looking at your highest cost people, you're looking at people with psychiatric conditions. And the numbers that have been really important for us as we've been dealing with some of the other initiatives in the state, 49% of the beneficiaries with disabilities have a psychiatric illness, almost half, and 52% of those who have both Medicare and Medicaid have a psychiatric illness. So again, big numbers. I'm going to turn this over to Tom now, who's going to talk about a very important study done by Kaiser.
Thanks, Sandra. I was looking at these bottles here. I was running through my mind was five bottles of water on the wall. Thought I'd better use water better than beer. Get my administrators upset with me if I use beer. So, I just wanted to start with a quote from Dr. Michael Hogan, who's the commissioner of the New York State Office of Mental Health, who said on the importance of integrated care, almost all of the new service models unleashed by the Accountable Care Act, from Medicaid health homes to accountable care organizations to patient-centered medical homes, cannot succeed without integrating behavioral and general medical care. The theme of integration is popping up everywhere, yet the mainstream is not prepared. They need our help. And that's absolutely true. I mean, very few physicians receive much of any training in addiction medicine, although I just read a report yesterday that said now 10 university medical schools have incorporated a required course in addiction medicine as part of their curriculum for their doctors. So that's an encouraging sign, but we need to obviously go a lot further. We know that clients with mental illness and substance use disorders drive many of the costs in our healthcare system, including hospital costs, emergency room, public health costs, because these are the folks who are the frequent users of these services. And so one of the Kaiser did a study a few years ago, and Kaiser has really been at the forefront of understanding the importance of integrated care for behavioral health and primary care. And the Kaiser small group plan has now been identified in California as the benchmark benefit plan under the exchange, health exchange. And they, because they understand that treatment is effective and that not treating people with substance use disorders causes a lack of improvement in other health conditions, problems in work productivity, more emergency room and inpatient utilization, and health problems and costs for family members as well. If you see this chart and the prevalence of substance abuse patients in terms of their rates of other diseases, you'll notice that in every single one of these areas, acid-related disorder, arthritis, asthma, COPD, headache, hypertension, lower back pain, and injury especially, the costs or the prevalence in individuals with substance use disorders is much higher than in other patients. So these are the conditions substance use is driving many of these other conditions, and this doesn't even include obvious connections with substance use disorders and hepatitis, HIV, and other diseases which are accentuated, or like diabetes, which cannot be controlled very well in people with substance use disorders. Kaiser study showing the medical costs after treatment for doing integrated medical care for people with SUD medical conditions, you can see on this chart that for integrated care, even though the initial cost, average PM per member per month cost, was higher than for usual care, if you look at the lighter blue line, after 12 months of treating with integrated care, the cost for per member per month cost were substantially lower than for the control group. So Kaiser's, you know, the reason that they are so strong on integrated care is because they can bring their per member per cost down after, you know, treatment has been offered in an integrated way. And not only for the individual client, but also they studied the cost for other family members, because as it makes, you know, it's reasonable to know that when an individual has a substance use disorder, that their other members of their family are impacted as well, and it enhances the health problems of other members of the family, mental health as well as physical health. And so Kaiser studied the impact of doing integrated care on family members and showed that after 2 to 5 years of intake, if a family member were abstinent. The one with the condition was abstinent at 1 year. Their other members of their family had similar average lower costs. So in other words, the health care or the health of the other family members was improved by getting treatment for the family member with the substance use disorder. So it saves money not only on the client's health care, but on other members of their family as well. And this is why Kaiser recognized the benefits and has a good in their benchmark benefit plan, has a good benefit structure for both mental health and substance use disorder treatment. I'll turn it back to Sandra.
So just looking at our Medi-Cal costs here in California, everything is called Cal something, so it's not Medicaid, it's Medi-Cal. 11% of Californians in the fee-for-service Medi-Cal system have a serious mental illness. Now, these are not people that are being treated in the county's managed care system for behavioral health. These are in the fee-for-service system. And of those 11%, healthcare spending for those individuals is 3.7 times higher than for all of the other population in the Medi-Cal fee-for-service system. And you can see the difference in numbers, a little over 14,000 as opposed to just under 4,000. Very significant numbers. Then I usually end, and again, there's a whole lot more information and the research behind all of this, but we end with this one because this was a study done by Milliman, which is a national actuarial firm, not a health advocacy firm. Which is always important for people to hear. And their conclusion was that if a 10% reduction could be made in the excess health care of patients with comorbid psychiatric and general health care systems via an effective, I want to emphasize effective, integrated medical behavioral health care program, $5.4 million could be saved for each group of 100,000 people. That's a phenomenal number. And the cost for doing nothing may exceed $300 billion per year in the United States. I was fortunate to hear the person who did this study recently, and he got, you know, really drills down more into the detail, and it's fascinating, fascinating. But the numbers are there. So those are the kinds of arguments that we've had the most success with in California, in the legislature, and frankly with our state administration, which at this point doesn't have a great deal of familiarity with behavioral health care services. So I'm just going to stop there and tell you that's work for us. If you're having trouble locally, think about the bottom line because that gets a heck of a lot more attention and actual work than just talking about how it's a good thing to do to help people have better health care. Not unimportant to most of us, but for policymakers, it's not necessarily the thing they're looking at most of the time. So let me just talk briefly about service integration in California. This is happening all over our state. This is a website that we put together. And if you, I don't think the link you can see, but if you just put in California County Behavioral Health Integration Initiative, this will pop up. But the thing is, we've got not all the counties on here yet, but we have a little over half and most of the big counties. And we asked a lot of questions about what they were doing in integration, and they answered all of these questions. So it shows not just where they are happening, but you could go through here and read what different counties are doing. And if there's information in there that's really useful to you, we also have the contact information. So you can contact them directly to talk about what they're doing. And it's, as I said, it's an amazing lot of work. Okay, so now no longer does the arrow work there. This is just Los Angeles County, and these are the behavioral health initiatives. So you can see how much is going on just in one county. Of course, it's a mega county, but there's a lot happening there. You could click on any of the balloons throughout this map if you want to look at a certain geographical area, and it'll tell you what that integration site is doing and who to contact if you want more information. So that's just as a resource. So as we've been thinking about integration and moving forward, we've really focused on the triple aim, which I'm sure you are very familiar with, so I won't read it to you. But we've tried to really keep our focus on that's what we're trying to do. One of the things that's true about California is that each one of these services is in its own silo, right? And I don't know about your states, but here everything has been separated for a long time. But people end up having all of these problems. So, you know, we hear this all the time from our clients, you know, don't you guys ever talk to each other? Well, no, we didn't used to talk to each other. So we're trying very hard to do that now. We have, one of the things that we've found that's been extremely helpful in helping people make the shift that they need to make is we've developed these learning collaboratives, and we've based it on the Institute for Healthcare Improvement's model for improvement. Those of you in healthcare are probably very familiar with this, but it hadn't been used much in behavioral health. So we've adopted it. We worked with the IHI folks to do this. They did a lot of training for us. And I have to admit, I was not a believer in the beginning. I had to be persuaded. And I was concerned because it's a very intensive process, takes a lot of work. And I wasn't all that sure that our behavioral health services in the counties were going to like that. Turns out they do. They really like it because it's really a way of understanding what they're trying to change, making the change, doing small kind of tests, and running small PDAs to make sure they're getting what they hope they're getting out of it. And then if it's successful, they spread it in the rest of their organization. But for the first time, they really have data to show them that the change is what they want to do. So the four that we have up and running right now, the first one is increasing client service capacity. And that one is focused on helping behavioral health organizations become high-performing organizations that are going to be in a good place when it comes to contracting with larger organizations. So they're learning new skills that they hadn't had before, so they can really measure what's going on and track not just the client, but the cost as it goes along, with a focus on recovery and resiliency. The next one is a small county integration effort. We have a lot of small rural counties in California, which is a surprise to you. I'm getting to the 2 minute already, which may be a surprise to you. We have a lot of small rural counties. Their resources are very different, so this one focuses on how they can do it. Then the larger one, which is developing mental health, primary care, and substance use disorders, integrated care, and a big focus on care coordination. The last one, and in that, they bring teams from mental health, substance use, primary care, and most of the cases, the health plan is also involved in the team. The last one we're doing here is strategies for integrating health, prevention, and community. That's focused in the health clinic itself, not in behavioral health, helping them address some of the needs of the people they are seeing with behavioral health by making partnerships with local CBOs, community-based organizations, that can support both in prevention and in helping that person retain their recovery. So I'm going to have to move pretty quickly here. There's a lot of reasons we're focusing on care coordination. It's been very, very difficult for us with all the silos that we have. There's no coordination currently. This learning collaborative really supports them as they're trying to make these changes. And I've already said most of this, I think. And, you know, it's pretty obvious, I think, why we're focusing on care coordination. The services are siloed. The person is not. There's all kinds of health risks and behavioral health risks that we're trying to address. Does that mean I'm supposed to stop? Wow. That was awful. This is just some of the research that we've done. We've got about 15 counties in this large counties in this CIC. This gives you a sense of they have looked at and measured all of the various conditions that the people who have behavioral health conditions have in addition to behavioral health. Care coordination, they just adopted a very simple definition of that, and they try to focus on that. The only thing I'm going to underline here is that clients and their families are essential partners. So when they're making care coordination decisions, they're sharing information, the individual and the family is very much involved in that. And you can look at this later. These are the foundational changes that we found are critical. If you're really going to do care coordination among all these very separate organizations, and I'm going to quit with that. I just want to say that these counties are making enormous strides, just enormous strides in what they're doing. And they are really bringing these disparate agencies together and coordinating care. With that, I'm going to turn this to Tom to talk about the coalition.
Thanks, Sandra. And I'll finish up with this. There's a whole bunch of dogs within about a mile radius here running for cover right now. Try not to make it any worse for them. Margaret, if I don't see the sign, just whack me with the lightsaber or something. Okay. This past year, we have created what is the California Coalition for Whole Health, and as Dr. Manderscheid said, you know, encouraging every state to have some sort of a coalition to work on this integrated health. But we modeled this after the National Coalition on Whole Health, of which Dr. Manderscheid is one of the co-founders. And the purpose was to bring together as many folks as we can from all areas of the healthcare system to talk about integration. We started out with just the mental health and substance use disorder representatives, and then we began expanding to now there's 45 active organizations who are participating in this, including the Hospital Association, the Primary Care Association, the Family Physicians, and a whole range of other representatives from the healthcare field. The purpose is to influence implementation of the Affordable Care Act so that it appropriately addresses mental health and substance use disorder issues along with other physical health issues, and also to influence the California benefit, the health exchange, in their decisions that they're making about mental health and substance use disorder coverage. Some of the positions that we've taken are based upon what are the estimates of the influx of newly covered individuals who in California by 2014, which range from 1.5 to 2 million new Medi-Cal beneficiaries and over 3 million others subsidized in plans under the health exchange. An estimated 147,000 to 195,000 of the new Medi-Cal enrollees will need substance use disorder services. An estimated 155,000 to 400,000. I mean, I know these are estimated figures, but it'll depend on how it rolls out and is implemented. Who will need mental health services. But we do know that because of the expansion of Medicaid to cover childless adults, that many of those who have not been eligible for Medicaid, who have substance use disorders, like single men, for example, will now be covered under the expansion. So it is going to mean a big number of additional clients in our system. As you know, the Affordable Care Act includes mental health and substance use disorder services among the 10 essential categories where benefits must be included and must be covered at parity. Now, I'm assuming, does everyone know what parity means when we talk? Okay, I figured you probably, most everybody. Well, very briefly.
Really mean.
Oh, I should not make any assumptions, should I? That's always what happens when you assume, right? Parity means that mental health and substance use disorder conditions have to be treated on par with other medical conditions, meaning equality in benefits. And the parity law now on the books, prohibits health plans from imposing financial and treatment limits on mental health and substance use benefits that are not imposed on medical surgical benefits. Parity also requires that under the ACA, it expands the parity requirements to all private health insurance plans, to Medicaid, and the plans under the state health exchanges. So basically, all of these plans now have to include behavioral health treatment on par with other conditions. Now, the key here is going to be we're still waiting for the federal final rule to determine how the parity rules will apply, because there are insurance plans that are, we know right now, that are trying to get out from underneath these requirements. And so we really need that final rule, and as well as strong enforcement and implementation at the state level to make sure that that parity is complied with. So that's one of the things that our coalition has been working on, as well as we were able to get language in our essential health benefits legislation that does require plans under the exchange to comply with parity, to make sure that that those benefits are equal. Essential health benefits must provide medically necessary care, levels of service necessary to treat behavioral health will utilize industry standard placement tools. Mental health and parity and addiction equity means that non-quantitative limitations as well as quantitative day and dollar limits on coverage must be comparable to those for medical and surgical conditions. I think I pretty much covered all that. So we're looking for for the Kaiser plan, for example, that I mentioned earlier, there are a couple of exclusions on around medication-assisted treatment. We feel that those exclusions do not meet parity, and so the coalition is further working with the Kaiser plan to include methadone maintenance, for example, for all individuals who need it. Benefits for behavioral health care, case management, prevention, wellness, and recovery must be clearly defined and must include all medically necessary classes of medication. At all levels, California's benefit exchange must meet the needs for behavioral health consumers by providing adequate eligibility outreach and enrollment and easy access to navigators. The vision for healthcare in California, and this is my concluding statement, should promote integrated care for mental health and substance use disorders into primary care medical homes and systems of care that link specialty and primary care services. And with that, I will end. Thank you very much.